ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
He was the man who stole the plans for the atomic bomb. A brilliant physicist, a devoted communist. A spy hiding inside the most secret project on Earth. This is the story of Klaus Fuchs, a man who believed he could serve two masters, science and the Soviets. To hear it, search for The Bomb on the ABC Listen app.
Norman, are you familiar with the game Would You Rather?
No, but what would I rather do?
Well, basically, yeah, it's basically would you rather have feet for hands or hands for feet, that sort of thing.
All right. So it's what you play with the kids in the car.
Basically,
on
yes.
On the way to the coast. Right.
Yes, but I'm going to do like a nerdy version of it with you today.
Okay.
Would you rather never exercise again or never eat vegetables again?
I think I'd rather never eat vegetables again than stopping exercise.
I think so too. Well, kind of, sort of, a little bit, that is a little bit what What's That Rash is about today.
Which is the podcast where we answer the health questions that everybody's asking.
Before we go on, would you rather have feet for hands or hands for feet?
Feet for hands, hands for feet. I would prefer hands.
Me too. Like a monkey.
How would you eat? Right. Do
yeah,
stuff.
Exactly. I would be able to climb trees so much better. Oh my gosh, I'd get so much better at climbing. Okay, let's go, let's go. Kathy has emailed in today saying, my husband and I have been sticking to a Mediterranean diet, ding ding, for over a year and recently had a holiday in Italy, i.e. a Mediterranean country. We had erroneously thought it would be easy to have a healthy diet in Italy, but now realise that this is not true.
Mortadella.
Kathy says, I would like to suggest that the reason people living by the Mediterranean Sea may have longer lives than most is the number of hills and stairs they have to climb in daily life and has little to do with what they consume. And Kathy says, could it be that exercise is more important than diet? Rob has a similar question, basically asking specifically about blood glucose levels, diet or exercise. So today, Norman, we are doing the ultimate showdown, diet v exercise, and imagine that this Mediterranean diet bell is sort of like a wrestling match bell.
Yeah, get it all out. Get it out of your system before we start.
It's going to be so many ding-dings today. All right. Diet versus exercise. Let's go.
So why don't you give us a bit of history here, because we've never done this before in terms of nutrition.
Oh gosh, it's so interesting and it's also so recent. Well, I think the thing is that for most of human existence, we really didn't have a lot of choice as to what we ate. It was like, what can I kill or forage? What grows in my area? What have my ancestors gathered in summer so that we can eat in winter? The word
we
diet...
We also didn't have much choice about labour-saving devices or
yes,
motor
exactly.
cars.
No, excellent point. Diet and exercise were sort of, the decisions were largely made for us. I was interested to discover that the Greek word dieta, Greek scholars, please.
Bugger if I know.
Please feel free to email me and tell me how much I mispronounce. Anyway, the word basically means way of living, the way you exist in the world. It's a very holistic view of diet as a lifestyle rather than just the food that you eat, which I thought was interesting. But the actual like nutritional sciences era probably started in around the 1700s with a Scottish man.
Of course.
James Lind.
Yep. So people who know their history might know the story of James Lind. One of the conditions that bedeviled long distance sea travel was scurvy.
Yes.
Bleeding, teeth falling out.
Scurvy is cooked. It's so gnarly. It's like all your old wounds open up again.
Indeed. And it was a significant cause of death. And you have to remember, this was an era where illness and disease killed more military personnel than warfare.
Mm.
And so if you could actually find something that preserved the health and well-being of your troops, you would actually have an advantage. And in fact, it's a long story here, but it's for another day. One of the reasons the British were so successful at colonising was that they had some secret medical weapons which others did not have, not against themselves, but to protect their health. But anyway, that's another story. Mm. Nobody knew what caused scurvy, but James Lind wanted to do a randomised trial to find out.
He did, and we have criticised in the past studies much larger than this, but he had 12 guys with scurvy. I suppose recruiting subjects was a thing as well. And they received different dietary interventions. And I don't know how he chose what to intervene with, because one of the things was seawater, like making people drink seawater to see if it cured scurvy.
Well, he concluded that being at sea, your diet was restricted and therefore you might be taking things that would bring on scurvy, or you might, some people might be taking things that might prevent it, or there was a deprivation syndrome going on. So he tried various dietary interventions.
So such as seawater, as I said, cider, vinegar, a mixture of garlic, mustard and horseradish, barley water, and crucially, citrus fruit. And that was what he demonstrated, obviously, that citrus fruits could both prevent and cure scurvy, which laid the groundwork for later vitamin C being discovered.
And again, one of the earliest examples of a randomised clinical trial.
So the actual, like, vitamins themselves, that was the discovery, well, at least it was named by a scientist called Casimir Funk. Coolest name ever. Actually, if you think there's a cooler name in science than Casimir Funk, email us, thatrash@abc.net.au. I challenge Casimir Funk to outname anyone that you can give to us, but I'm happy to be proved wrong. Anyway, Casimir Funk was the guy who came up with the word vitamin because he thought it was an amine, a nitrogen compound, and he thought it was vital. And so that's where we get the word vitamin from. Scientists later discovered that you didn't need an amine group for something to be a vitamin. They dropped the E, but the name otherwise stuck.
Okay, so we're now arguing the case for diet being the most important thing. So let's just do a bit of rah-rah for diet here. And one of the rah-rahs is the Framingham Heart Study, which started in 1948, following thousands of people in the town of Framingham in Massachusetts.
Right. So this is, I think, those big diet pattern studies, like not just focusing on a single nutrient, like a vitamin, but diet patterns, that's a very like mid-20th century onwards thing. It's pretty recent, I think, really.
So they showed, you know, high saturated fat, that the Western diet was bad for you. Really interesting studies, again, pushing the diet side of this story, is that when they developed rationing in the UK, they used a leading nutritionist, I think she was at Cambridge University, designed what was considered then to be a healthy diet. And in fact, it was quite a healthy diet. And rationing restricted unhealthy parts of the diet. And things like coronary heart disease did decline during the war.
Right.
Because rationing put you on a healthier diet. And then there was Ansel Keys.
So Ansel Keys is one of those people whose name, you know how there's this sort of sense that everyone's born already knowing all the lyrics to Beatles songs? I feel like I kind of knew who Ansel Keys was before I even knew who he was. And one of the things that he is famous for is what's called the Seven Countries Study. So he basically looked at, it was kind of
the bell for the Mediterranean
diet. He sure did. He basically was the guy who was first like Mediterranean diet.
But it was mostly Crete that he studied. It was the Greek island diet that he particularly lionized. A lot of the idea about cholesterol really consolidated in Ansel Keys' work, although it was there in the Framingham study as well.
And what these studies are looking at are basically mortality and death. So like, what do you eat and how do you die? And so to sort of come back around to this like a diet versus exercise thing, turns out diet's pretty important. So I don't know how many points that tallies up on the side of diet, but there's a few there.
And one of the themes that we'll come to in a minute is it depends on what you want and what you're trying to achieve, whether diet or exercise is going to work, not just our personal preferences. So let's go to the exercise side of the equation. Does it, you know, how does it measure up? Is it going to win the prize?
Well, let's have a look. So, I mean, in a similar way, I mentioned some pretty recent stuff with diet and nutrition. Obviously, we've known that food's important for our health for centuries, decades, millennia.
And speaking about the Greek island diet, you know, they ran a lot, you know, these marathons, taking messages.
One guy ran and then he died. I don't know why people now suddenly want to do marathons when the famous first marathon was pretty bad for that guy's health.
But that was because they killed a messenger. He had a message and the person who received it didn't like it that much.
Anyway, let's talk about exercise. We have known that exercise is good for you in moderation for a while. Susruta from India is one of the first known physicians to prescribe moderate daily exercise to his patients. This is 600 BCE, so a little while ago now. But the paper says it should be taken every day, but only to half extent of his capacity. Otherwise, it may prove fatal. I mean, that's technically correct. I don't know about the half your capacity thing, but if you do exercise too hard, you could die.
Well, if you've already got heart disease, but it's actually quite an unusual complication of exercise. You can go pretty hard.
Oh, the other thing that Susruta said was, diseases fly from the presence of a person habituated to regular physical exercise. Norman Swan, fact check, please.
Absolutely, 100%. And I use the ancient Greeks as my other reference here.
Okay, please explain.
Well, they used to like running around with no clothes on and lionized exercise as a very important part of spiritual life.
I mean, in terms of communicable diseases, I think if you were running around naked, people would give you a wide berth and you're probably less likely to catch something
less
from
friendly.
Them.
Yeah, true.
Actually, this is did you sort of like pepper the research document with just Scottish guys? Because there was another Glaswegian who is important in the exercise health story.
Yeah, this is Professor Jerry Morris, who ended up in London, but yes, came from Glasgow. And he did this fascinating study comparing the risk of heart disease between drivers of double-decker buses and the conductors who would run up and down the stairs taking the fares.
We have talked about this one before, I think.
We have. And he found that the drivers had much higher rates of heart disease than the conductors who climbed the stairs. He also did it in postal service. Postmen who delivered the mail on bike or foot had fewer heart attacks than sedentary men who served behind postal counters or as telephonists or clerks. So, you know, if Jerry was in the studio, he would be pushing exercise really strongly.
So that's sort of, I guess, a potted history of the origins of the science of diet and exercise. Lots of asterisks at the end of that would cut out a lot of stuff. So now I really think if we're going to compare the two, we probably need different arenas for this because, as you said before, it depends what you want, whether diet or exercise is more important.
Well, let's start with weight loss.
Okay.
It's very hard to do enough exercise that will compensate for swallowing calories in your diet. So if what you're wanting is weight loss, you've actually got to change your dietary pattern and reduce the intake of cheap empty calories, for example, so that you are tailoring your energy intake to your energy output. Now, once you do that and you add exercise, you do get added benefit, but very hard to lose weight if you're relying on exercise. It's just so inefficient in terms of burning calories. That's not what you get from exercise. You get a lot more from exercise than weight loss. So diet wins, 1-0 on weight loss.
Okay, so
weight
loss.
It's not quite 1-0. It's like 1 versus 0.2.
Oh, very scientific, very specific. So weight loss, really important for some people, less relevant for lots of us. What about other factors or facets of health? What about...
Let's take cardiovascular fitness.
Yes, you took the acronym right out of my mouth.
So cardiovascular fitness, it's exercise.
Okay.
There's really, strengthening your muscle.
Cardiovascular health, when you say cardiovascular fitness, do you mean like your heart?
Your cardiorespiratory fitness. Your effectively your ability to exercise without getting breathless, lift things, do things, have good muscle strength.
How does that translate to cardiovascular risk of something like a stroke or a heart attack?
So exercise has an almost immediate effect on reducing your risk of sudden cardiac death. I mean, people talk about sudden cardiac death being a problem with exercise. In fact, exercise reduces the risk of sudden cardiac death, and it does it very, very quickly.
I'm surprised to hear that. I think I sort of thought it was like you're sort of playing the long game, you're laying a lot of groundwork throughout your whole life so that you don't get a heart attack when you're in your 60s or something like that. Well, how quickly are we talking?
There is truth to that, but you get very immediate effects of exercise at a moderate level. I mean, why do we do it every day or two? It's because the immediate effects tend to disappear after a day or two, and you've got to do it again for them to come back. So there are long-term effects in terms of muscle strength, of improved cardiac output, the resilience of the cardiovascular system. But what happens when you take exercise is that your blood vessels expand, your blood pressure goes down. It goes up initially, but then goes down. Your pulse rate eventually drops. There's all sorts of things. Your sympathetic nervous system gets settled down. So after exercise, your body goes into this state, which is actually a state of reduced cardiac risk. But you've got to repeat the exercise in order to gain that benefit. So repeated exercise is for both its immediate effects and its long-term effects. By the way, it's similar for smoking. When you stop smoking, the effects happen within hours, days, and weeks, not necessarily years. There are benefits over time. So diet does have an effect on cardiovascular risk, but it's hard to change your diet quickly enough to have that effect. Where we're coming to with all this is exactly as you say, it depends on what you want. So if you want cardiovascular protection, you got to do both.
Okay, so we need to touch base on our score, which is very scientific and not at all imaginary. We had 1 versus 0.2. We're talking about weight loss before. 1 being diet and 0.2 being exercise. What are we up to when we add in cardiovascular health?
I think that we're on to 2-all, really, with a bit of 0.02 there for exercise. So in the end, it's pretty equal.
Well, the question that Rob asked was specifically about blood glucose control. What do we know about that?
A lot of that is diet, but some of it is exercise too, because if you exercise, particularly muscle strengthening exercises, you increase the bulk and metabolism of a highly metabolically active tissue, which is muscle. And muscle metabolizes sugar, and muscle is very important in terms of sensitivity of the body to insulin. So if you change your diet to one which is higher in complex carbohydrates, etc., you will help your blood sugar, but you will also help your blood sugar in the long term by exercise, by strengthening muscles, and by having strong muscles, because strong muscles prevents your blood sugar spinning out of control.
Okay, so score check?
We're still, now we're at 3-all, really, aren't we? Round about thereabouts?
Sure, why not? So, okay, so I asked you before if you'd rather never exercise again or never eat a vegetable again, and you said you could do without veggies, but you couldn't do without exercise. So your team exercise, I'm guessing, behaviourally.
I think I am, yes.
Yeah, me too.
It's hard to control my out-of-control appetite. That's the problem.
Well, it's also like it's easier to find an hour to go and do something active than it is to like coordinate all of the different food and food environments that you find yourself in day to day.
Correct. And that's one of the issues here is that it is easier to change your exercise-focused lifestyle than your dietary lifestyle, which is ingrained in habits. Your appetite's control is set when you're in late adolescence, and sometimes it's really hard. And also, if you don't have as much money in your pocket to buy healthy food, or you're living in a part of Australia where healthy food is harder to get or more expensive, then getting out and exercising is a really important thing to do. Now, there are other things where exercise is really much better for you.
Ooh.
And that is, for example, in the prevention of osteoporosis.
Of course.
You want weight-bearing exercise, you want high-impact gravity-based exercise that stimulates the growth of your bone. So that is much more important than your diet when it comes to osteoporosis, for example. And then there's brain health.
Mm-hmm.
And the evidence on brain health is that you can't separate out diet from exercise, that these factors, which both protect the brain and put the brain at risk, work together. So you can't separate the two.
Well, that's probably lucky because it sounds like it's roughly a tie, and this was a false dichotomy anyway.
I think it was.
Completely imaginary.
But a good challenge. Thank you very much.
I think so too. And there have actually been studies looking at what we kind of do with this information about the fact that some people can only do one or the other. And people have looked at what is easier to do. And no surprise, exercise is easier for people to implement than diet change, as you and I have already established in our N=2 study.
It is.
So, Rob, Kathy, what do we say to Rob and Kathy?
You were going to the wrong restaurants in Italy.
Where would you recommend?
Well, that's the whole thing.
Apart from the coffee gelato place.
It is the whole thing about the Mediterranean diet, is that the diet changes around the Mediterranean. And Ansel Keys' work and others focused on the Greek islands. So that was the Greek island diet. And sure, you go to Italy and you eat processed meats. It's not a very healthy diet. But the traditional Italian diet is pretty healthy and not too different from the Greek island diet. You know, you're getting your protein from legumes. You're not eating that much red meat. And you've got complex carbohydrates. So there is a version of that. But when you're there on holiday and stuffing your face with prosciutto and mortadella...
Okay, so final word, Norman, this question without notice. If someone's listening going, okay, diet, exercise, both important, what do I do today? What's one thing that I do today in each of those columns to improve my health? What do you recommend?
Make the majority of each plate filled with vegetables and the minority of the plate filled with protein. And exercise, get out there and do some, any, and then progressively increase it as time goes on.
Add a serve of veg, add a serve of exercise, and add an email to thatrash@abc.net.au with your health question. Rob, Kathy, thank you both so much for your questions today.
Now, we want some special feedback from you.
Right. So this is usually where I would say what your feedback has been. Well, this is a note to say that we are now back. We're back from holidays. We are reading and responding to your emails. So please send in your questions for 2026. And like I said a few weeks back, I want to know what has been said around the dinner table over the holidays. Send us your slightly unhinged relatives' theories about health, your questions that you want us to tackle.
Yeah, Uncle Arthur on vaccines. Love to hear it.
And we will tuck into those questions in the coming months.
See you next week.
We'll see you then.